And here we go, back at it again for one last time here on the 2016-2017 season. Mike Jacobson, Scott King, Brent Sopel in the house today, and our guy Jimmy Greenfield all in attendance. Brittany Tulis currently videoing right now, but she'll be joining in a little bit later to talk
everything. She does everything.
She does
a little behind the scenes, but she jumps in, knows hockey. It's great to have her.
She's definitely a jack of all trades. Yeah. It's her third time being here.
Maybe more politically correct.
Jackette of all trades. And we, of course, broadcasting live from the Tribune Tower here on the beautiful Mag Mile. Seventh floor, Studio A, the more comfortable studio as we finish out the season here. Nobody thought that we would be doing our season recap show right now at 11 a.m. on April 25th. Nobody expected this. Hawks inevitably got swept. We all kind of had a feeling they would not win the series. I don't think any of us predicted a sweep, though.
After those first few games, it was really going to be hard for them to claw their way back. It was really going to be hard. The Predators were not letting up at all, and they didn't look like the Hawks in the playoffs.
One word to describe the series, Brent Sopel.
Gross.
Well said.
You asked one word.
Now we can expand on that. But we'll get one word from you too, Jimmy.
Brutal.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Brutal. Gross. What are you going to go with? Smelly.
Yucky.
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 Okay.
Listen, hey, you're not at home with your kids.
I would
leave your wife out of
I'm
this.
I'm still in baby mode. Yeah.
I would say just disheartening all around. Well, I mean, if there's one thing you could point to as a former player watching on, you know, something that we might not see as reporters and people that are listening to the podcast as fans, one thing that really stuck out to you why they lost this series?
Well, obviously they
got in the fashion they did.
You know, they got outworked. You know, that was plain as day. You know, you got to give Nashville some credit. They played at like 120%. Now if they continue to play this way, I believe they can win the Stanley Cup.
I think so too.
That's how out of their world that they've been playing, and you've got to get hot at the right time. But the Blackhawks had no pushback, and there's something wasn't right. I don't know what it is. Can't put my finger on it. Haven't found it. I'm still digging to China to figure it out. But that's not the team. Those aren't my brothers that I've known for many, many years that I've been through war with and sweat with and bled with. I don't know what it was, what was off, but something's there. Now, you know, we're going to see some dominoes. We've already seen a few dominoes drop because of that. You know, losing the first round, four straight, in the first time in history that a 8-seed sweeps a number one seed. And that never sits well with the ownership here of, and, you know, never mind Chicago Blackhawks, but it wouldn't be sitting well with any team in the NHL.
Right. Well, for me, there's so many things that you can look at and put your finger on with why, not only why they lost, but why they got swept, why it was so devastating. If you want to focus on one strategy that really worked for the Predators, that worked game in and game out every game, is that neutral zone trap. And that's kind of crazy because when teams have done it to the Hawks in the past, it takes a game or two, but they always find their way around it. They know they got to get pucks in deep, you know, and they usually do.
Absolutely, and we could go and look at numbers, power play numbers, penalty kill, possession numbers, the neutral zone, the 1-4. It's tough to play against. It's frustrating to play against, but usually the Blackhawks, they know how to adapt. They've got the guys to adapt, but they didn't. And that's why that's why I keep saying there's that one thing. I don't know what it was. I don't know what it is that they couldn't get through. They didn't have the effort. They didn't have the resilience-ness to get through that certain check, do those certain things with all those numbers. So there's that something that's missing. There's that one piece of that puzzle that I haven't figured out yet.
You know, what's scary was that in the year after you won the Cup in 2010, they fell behind the Canucks 3-0, and they came back and nearly won that series, right?
Overtime, real close.
And this year, when they fell behind 3-0, people use that series as an example. Oh, they did it once, they can do it again. I don't think anyone truly believed that. It was fun to say it because it gave us some hope, but they just weren't in any position to really fight back. They didn't have it. I don't know. I mean, if it wasn't effort, God, I'd love to know why.
Right.
Because we know the talent is there. A little bit older, maybe a little bit too young, but what was it that put them into a position where they just could not compete with this team?
Well, something that somebody said, one of your old teammates, Brent, said that the bite was missing. They didn't have the bite, and that was very visible. That's why when they go down 3, everyone had a really bad feeling because they didn't see that bite. They didn't see the fight or the hunger to win and win another cup. But then you hear – Q says Anisimov's injury is pretty bad. It was really limiting him. That's just one guy. Maybe there's more injuries, but
you know, I think I might have mentioned this. You know, right before the playoffs. You know, I knew his injury wasn't. I knew he wasn't going to be very good. You know, he's 20% of the draws come game four. Hockey players are the toughest. You know, it just came out yesterday that Patrick Marleau, San Jose Sharks, playing with a broken thumb. Joel Thornton was playing with a torn ACL, MCL.
Yeah, two tears in his knees. Yeah. How terrible is that?
So his knee was completely mangled. He went into surgery yesterday. So I don't know what the extent of Nisimov's injury is. You know, there's going to be more. There's going to be other guys that need surgery. You know, that's what happens coming down. You know, all the pieces got to fall perfectly in line. You go back to these three Stanley Cups. There was no major injuries in any of those. Yeah. You know, there's bumps and bruises. Like, I was mangled. But, I didn't have a blown ACL, MCL, you know, tear like Joe Thornton. We didn't have, you know, a completely shattered foot where you couldn't even skate. You know, everybody was hurt. But all those pieces have to, you know, fit in perfectly. And Nisimov was one of those pieces. He's your second-line center. And if he's only winning the draw 20% time when he's taking every offensive draw because you got Patrick Kane and Panarin out there, they're offensive guys, that's a huge key to the factor.
Was there something in the play of Jonathan Toews that was a little suspicious to you? Do you feel like there's that back is not fully healed or something – potentially could have been laboring him, because he just did not look the same either?
Well, you know, you can go through that and almost point that out to a lot of guys. You know, guys are hurt. Will he be bumped, you know, have bumps and bruises? There's no question. You take a look at the 16 teams going to playoffs, maybe 95% of those guys going in are hurt. You just played 82 games, with all the travel. It's a long year. It was a war. So nobody's healthy.
Right.
We're all playing that way. But this is playoff time. You know what 16 wins gets you, and that's what you're living off of. And, you know, Blackhawks just didn't have that, and I wish I knew why.
You have to figure that Stan, if injuries were the predominant reason why things went south, Stan wouldn't be talking about being so angry.
And making changes. He's already put it out there. He's made, we're going to get to it in a minute, two coaching changes. And you got it. You feel that there's going to be some player changes too, the way he talked at the end of the year press conference.
He's, you know, there's the injuries. Even you never blame injuries. You never will. You're not going to hear any team or any coach blame on injuries. They, you know, obviously we talked about, everybody talked about, the work ethic wasn't there. They got outworked. Now, that's unacceptable. You can take a look at the mirror, go back to last year in game seven. Obviously, you know, lost to St. Louis Blues. They gave it all. They emptied their tank. And you can look in, when you look in the mirror as a coaching staff, as a GM, and anybody in the organization, you can look at it and say, you know what, those players gave everything they can. All right, I'm okay losing. It's when you look in that mirror and say, all right, my players didn't give all that they had. All right, now I'm not okay with losing.
It's the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast here. The voice you just heard, 2010 Stanley Cup champion Brent Sopel, and our colleague here at WGN Radio, Jimmy Greenfield, to my left, Scott King to my right. He's also from WGN Radio, and you can also check out his blog on WGNRadio.com, the Chelsea blogger. So 2 years in a row, they get ousted in the first round. Some of the casualties in this, most particularly, is assistant coach Mike Kitchen. You guys surprised with that firing, Jimmy?
I wish I could say I knew enough about the dynamic to say whether this is going to make a difference, but clearly Stan Bowman decided he should not be part of the team. And what were his day-to-days? Was he the power play guy?
He was PK and defense, I believe.
Yeah, he ran the defense, and he was working
special
on
team.
The special teams, penalty kill. So,
what about you, Brett?
You know, it's interesting. You take a look a bit deeper. He's been here since 2010. That's Joel Quenneville's best friend.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not sitting very well with Joel Quenneville right now. And, you know, I know that, and he didn't have any say in this. So this is going, you know, coming right up from what Stan has seen. And, you know, I don't know if Stan had, exit meetings or what was going on. You know, he already said Joel's coming back. You know, maybe they take a look at defense. You know, once you start breaking down games and numbers and, you know, the statistics and analytics and blah, 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 maybe, you know, they saw more and they wanted more out of that defense. And maybe they think that, you know, Mike Kitchen's, voice is, you know, getting old now, and they want to find that fresh voice for a veteran. You know, you're going to have a half a veteran group, and the other half are going to be young guys. With you know, Frozenling's going to have to jump in. Don't expect to see TVR back. Kepney, you know, maybe a couple other young guys along the way.
Yeah, the move didn't surprise me with firing Kitchen, because obviously Stan Bowman talked about making change, and you kind of feel like some drastic change was going to happen with two, like you said, Mike, two first-round exits, getting swept this time. That's after you win 50 games. That's after you win the Central, win the Western Conference. So there's no excuses. They did have a good team.
Rats up the number one seed early.
Yeah, you know,
they could have added to their complacency, too.
There were a lot of games. They led the league in one-goal games. They were not dominating by any stretch.
But they still found a way to win, though. And that's, yeah.
They did, but eventually those things even out. If you're playing close games, especially in the playoffs, and playoffs hockey is different. And they had a lot of players who had no experience with playoff hockey.
Kane would agree with you, because he said we won a lot of close games, one-goal games, and maybe that made us think that we were better than we were. So, yeah you might have something there, Jimmy. But back to Kitchen, I think change was needed. And, look, you're not going to fire Quinville. That's in a way kind of cutting the head off the team. That wouldn't sit well with a lot of people, and especially if after all his success, I don't think he deserves to be the one that goes. So Kitchen goes, and that's a change of the coaching staff, and that's telling the players already, hey, heads up, this is gonna be different, things are gonna be a lot different around here, and maybe Bowman's taking a little control of the organization. So more changes coming, and we saw that today, another firing with Ted Dent, the head coach of the Rockford IceHogs, the Blackhawks AHL affiliate.
Yeah, so this has reached to the AHL, yeah, too. So the firing of Ted Dent after six seasons.
That one, I mean, Brent, you're a guy who played in both leagues. I don't know if that one was – is it necessary? Do they need to keep sending the coaching staff message? I mean,
well,
how much control does he have in the organization?
Here's the thing. Oh, yeah, changes are going to happen. Okay, all right, tell me how. You tell me how. Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Brent Seabrook, Duncan Keith, Marian Hossa, who else? All have no trade clauses. Yarmolson, Corey Crawford, you've got guys with modified no trade clauses. You got three-quarters of your team locked up on no trade clauses and modified no trade clauses.
Sharp had one, though, right? Sharp had no trade clause, didn't he?
Yeah, he waived it.
Yeah, so there's ways to get guys to waive it, right?
Well, this is different. I mean, you've got enormous salaries. You've got players who, you know, they're not going to want to leave. You know, there's talk about maybe Crawford would accept a trade to Montreal, but Montreal said Carey Price isn't getting moved. That's not happening.
Crawford's not going.
Yeah. So what you can talk about making changes, but the salary cap put such a kibosh in everything.
Yeah.
And the thing that gets me is we all love Kane and Toews. Everyone appreciates what they've done, how good they are. And I would never, you know, diminish how important they are, but their salaries are huge, and they're far more than any other twosome in the NHL by far, by about $3 or $4
sure.
million dollars. So that plays a role in this. You have to have success with the young guys. And Hartman had a good year. Some of the young guys had a good year, but they were not dominant. You didn't have a
Brandon Saad. Look, they have a good year to build on too. And they have very minimal playoff experience, but they have that to build on as well. They know how it is going in there, how much more intense and fast and tight it is. But I think with you had a good point with Toews and Kane. I think Kane, nothing is going to happen with Kane for a long time. He's guaranteed to be a top three almost player in the league every year, right? At this point right now, the way he plays every year. Toews, obviously, his numbers regressed a little bit the last two seasons. So, I mean, that's your captain. We built the franchise on these guys' backs. And,
certainly,
and they can still play.
But it doesn't matter if their salaries are preventing them from getting one more solid player, which is just a fact.
But there's other ones, too. You can say that about Seabrook. You say about Hossa.
Sure.
Hossa might have a good year left in him after this year, too.
No. But still, it's a lot less.
Right.
And comparing it not to what the Hawks are doing, but what other teams have to do with. Other teams who you know, I think the Penguins have, or maybe the Wild with Parise and Suter had like maybe a combined $17 million for their guys. You're in a position where other teams don't have to worry about the cap in the way the Hawks do. Similar ways, but the Hawks have special problems with the cap.
Brent, from your perspective, how much has the hard cap really just changed everything?
Changed everything. Again, Chicago Blackhawks, you know, a team that you know, makes a lot of money, you know, around the city, has ability to spend. They could, you know, if they could spend $100 million, then they'd spend $100 million.
Yeah, they would.
You know, go back to 2010 when they traded nine of us. None of us, if the salary cap wasn't here, the nine of us wouldn't have left.
Well, yeah, why would you?
Why would you? Yeah. They would not trade us all. We just won.
That young nucleus.
49 years, you know, we finally bring Stanley Cup. Well, they would not trade us. You know, they would have left it as is. So it really changes, you know.
More negatives than positive, in your opinion? Or?
No, you know, I'm going to look at this as a whole NHL. So for the whole NHL and the game, it's benefited. You know, did it push me out of the league? Yeah. But for the game, obviously, you take a look at the parity. You take a look at the Washington Capitals. You know, they got pushed to Game 7 in overtime by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah. You know, you go, Nashville Predators come in and sweep Chicago Blackhawks. You know, I think it was 18 games in the first round went to overtime. Mm-hmm. You know, so at any point night, a team can beat somebody. Now, you go back to the days when you had the New York Rangers spending $100 million, and they had an all-star team out there, and they'd come across, you know, a poor-lonely team that, you know, the Minnesota Wild at that point in time, where they didn't have a lot of money, or the small market
Panthers,
teams. They just kind of steamroll them. But now, it doesn't matter who it is. There's great. Every team is going to be great. Next year, you know, Vegas is coming in, which is also going to throw a wrench into all this, you know, where I think TVR will end up getting picked by Vegas, Golden Knights, in the expansion draft. Every team's going to lose one guy. So I think he's going to be the guy that they pick. So now you got 31 teams. That may be the worst team of it all, and that's an expansion team. And they're still going to be decent, you know, with this roster of picks. So, you know, you wish that you could have free reign and be a soft cap like baseball and just pay a luxury tax. But, you know, again, you take a look at the parity. There's not as much parity in baseball because of that. You have your top teams that spend, you know, astronomical money. Look at the Chicago Cubs. And then you got your low market teams. And hockey doesn't, you know, you have those low market teams that really are really competitive now.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, the parity, it is a good thing because, I mean, you even look at the NBA now, it's still really top heavy for the most part, the NBA, and it's not as much parity because it is not a hard cap like the NHL. And, I mean, you look at other major sports like that. So there is definitely something to that, no question about it. But, I mean, it's just so hindering at times, too.
Yeah, but when you win, and here's the other problem is that teams that don't win don't have salary cap problems.
Right.
That's a good point.
Yeah, they're happy to go out and get guys because they can.
Yeah. You had the Chicago Blackhawks here that we talk about the salary cap issue every summer because they have won 3 Stanley Cups in the last 7 years.
No. Yeah.
So that's why they haven't drafted higher than 18th spot since 2008. You know, these are the issues.
That's pretty crazy.
These are the issues that come along when you're a great organization and all you do is win. So at some point in time, things catch up to you. You get handcuffed, and you figure it out. You know, well, they're going to have to move salary. Right now, they're at, you know, looking for next year at $73 million right now without re-signing Kempney, without re-signing Panic.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Brian Campbell if they decide to bring him back on a low number.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Johnny Dewey. I don't think Johnny Dewey is not going to come back. But, you know, they still got to move money still. But this is what happens when you win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
The thing is, Sam Hillman's learned to deal with it, too, is the thing. And he goes for it every year, and that's what you want to see as a fan. But then, like this year, Phil Deneau looked pretty good. You know, this year you always see these guys that probably you let go, the young prospects that could have helped you. But he does go for it every year, and he's going to have to find a way this year again.
Yeah, you know, it's hindsight's always 20/20 when you draft. Yeah, Phil Deneau played really, really well. And, you know, good for him. He was playing on the top line. And did a great job, and you know, good for him. But you know, hindsight's 20/20 in life.
Sure.
And look at, I wouldn't be sitting here right now if I had hindsight.
No,
I'd still be playing. I guarantee I'd still be playing hockey.
And I say, look at everything Bowman's done right too.
Yeah.
I mean, people have been arguing on social media all week. If people still like, they don't really give him credit for the 2013 cap. He's a guy who got Shaw. He got Saad. I mean, was Saad?
People are always going to be reactionary, particularly with the way social media is now. Right. Just immediate.
It's easy to put your thoughts out there and go at people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, people they get very emotional because they are so committed and they're such passionate fans now of the Blackhawks. When 15 years ago, team wasn't even on TV.
But this is where, you know, we're really starting to see, you know, Steinbohm's era right now. You know, the draft picks. You know, obviously, when he took over, Dale Tallon had drafted a lot of those guys, had, you know, majority of that team in place. You know, that whole, you know, 2010 team, you know, Dale had majority of that. And all those draft picks for two or three years after were all Dale's. So that's where the fans are coming and
for
saying.
For sure. And they have a point there. But I'm saying 2013 and especially 2015 when you go out and get Vermette and Desjardins.
Oh, yeah. You know, getting those guys. You know, I think the fans, you know, this is really where you see the draft picks really coming into play from the Stan Bowler-Marin. I think this is where you see Ted Dent getting fired in the minors. You know, they finished you know, in the very bottom of the AHL. I don't know if it was last. It was close to the bottom. Now, they don't, you know, they want you to win. They want you to make the playoffs. They want you to get the experience. So when you're done in the AHL, you jump in the NHL, you're ready to go. So they just, you know, obviously don't think the development of those players are moving, you know, in the direction that they want. You know, Mike Kitchen goes, you know, development of defense. Teddy Dent down in the minors, development there. So you're really starting to see some of that.
Real quick, Brent, I wanted to ask you about, I know Brian Campbell said he's kind of leaving his fate in the Hawks' hands, it sounds like. You know, he said he doesn't want to go anywhere else. You know, he's lives in Western Springs. He loves being here. He loves 30, the team.
What's 37 his address? Now?
What's his address? I don't know. I just see him at Oberweis. But no, so what do you think? Do you see that him re-signing? Do you see the Hawks saying, okay, come on back a year. You know, we'll have you on a third pairing. We'll use you. You can log some minutes.
Well, yeah. You know, I know Brian. We live not far from each other. And, you know, his wife's from here. You know, this is home for him. You know, he's got two kids. So that really is going to play a big factor. Does he want to go anywhere else? Will he go anywhere else? No. You know, I think that he either re-signs here or he hangs him up. And, you know what? Do I see the Blackhawks bringing him back? I do for you know, for a low number. You know, again, you got to remember that I think, you know, and you look anywhere else that they talk about, TVR will be gone, you know, because of the expansion draft. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants Marcus Kruger, only reason because of his $3 million cap hit. But, you know, if I'm George McPhee, the GM of Vegas Golden Knights, I'm like, all right, I'm TVR is my guy. Absolutely. You've got to build that back end. And obviously he's proven, you know, he was probably the best defenseman in these four games. And, he's getting better and he's getting better. So now you have, you know, your three guys, Seabrook, Keith, and Yamelson. Yeah. You know, Rosie's re-signed, so you can have him again as the – you know, sixth, seventh, eighth guy. Forsling, you pop in there, but Kempney, do you pop in there? You know, what do you do? You know, Brian Campbell, you can play, you know, you can put him in your first pair, you can put him in your third pair. He's a guy that's a veteran guy that's a good leader that helps these young guys. And I'd bring him back. I guess, you know, this was a low cap hit to, you know, with his bonuses at just over $2 million. So they'd lower that. And, you know, I think he'd stay for one more.
Jimmy, I was just going to say, your son plays some goalie. Another guy who's going to go is probably Darling. What do you think of that move? Do you see him kind of – there's no other way maybe because he deserves to be a number one guy now.
Yeah, my son's 10, so he's not quite ready. He's not drafted.
He's not eligible?
Yeah, he's almost there, but soon.
I'm sure Bowman's got him on the phone already, though. He's already got some scouts out there.
He's at his games in a suit.
Yeah, he'd take that call. You know, the thing about the defense is so concerning is they don't – They don't seem to have anyone ready. And, you know, what I wonder is, are they willing to trade someone like Hartman or a package for a top four 25-year-old, I don't know who's out there, NHL defenseman, somebody who is good, somebody who actually has a nice cap hit and who you're trading some of what you have for what you don't have. You have offense. You don't have defense.
The great words were, well, you know, a top four D-man with a good cap hit. Well, you and every single NHL team, the Edmonton Oilers will give up Eberle. They will give up half their farm team to find that.
That's a big piece. Prices are high enough. That's a big piece.
Oh, my God. That is a piece.
So
big piece
of the puzzle. Out, if, they're not, if the guy is not out there and that's what the Hawks need, then they're not going to be able to fix their problem.
They have to find a way to fix their problems. Yeah.
Okay, well, they have to find a way.
I'm agreeing with you, yeah.
But if it's a ridiculous notion that that can happen, and you know, I mean, that sounds like it is, it's very unlikely, then they are just in a position where they can't have what they need.
Well, you know, you take, you know, Forsling's got another year, you know, small guy, gives him another summer to bulk up. Now he knows the league, you know, he played in the minors, and You know, played fairly well. You know, it was a tough transition. You know, everybody, you know, I always say it's not easy from guys that grew up in Europe and coming over at that young of age. You know, when I left here, I went to Russia for 3 years. I think I was like 34, 35 years old, something like that, or, you know, maybe a little less than that. You know, so I was married and kids at that point in time. I'm like, oh, my goodness. This is not easy. So to be 10, 12, 14 years younger, coming over to a whole new country, into the best league, you know, in the world, where guys are going 100 miles an hour and they're trying to take your head off and they have no respect and they want to kill you. So well, and Kapanen, the same thing. You know, still, that's a big transition. He's a little bit older. So you still, you got a couple guys that, you know, can fill those roles that you're, you know, you that you're alluding to.
And that's the thing too, a lot of fans overlook that, the just the adapting to a new culture aspect. You were talking about, you were 34, 35 with a family moving to Russia. That's a huge deal. That's not even dealing with your actual job. You're having to deal with everything. The language change.
I was chasing Panarin around the ice in Russia, swearing at him in Russian. Couldn't catch him.
That's right.
You know, but yeah, that's one thing people never take that. When you take a college kid, you know, John Hayden, he was carrying, you know, he had his little backpack, you know, hopping around class to class, and then now he's in the NHL.
Yeah.
You know, it's
and having to learn a new city and everything else.
Tomorrow he's back in class at Yale. Tomorrow
he goes back to class. Right. So it's a different world. You go from college. It's the pro game is a whole different world. Whole different world. So as you got to, you know, it's a big adjustment coming from Europe. So I think the Blackhawks have some guys to fill those roles. So it's not like they don't. It's not like they're calling your son to back up Corey
Crawford.
He
can play everything. I know that. Well, here, just to finish, before Mike gets to a fan question or two here, I think we have time for a couple. I just want to finish touching up on Darling. I think it's another thing that, like, people, you wonder, Hossa said he's ready to be back. I think he's going to be back. He had 26 goals this year. And Darling, you love him in that backup role, but he did prove himself as a number one guy. So he's pretty much as good as gone, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. Again, it's all about the salary cap.
Yeah.
You know, he thinks he's a number one. Now the question is, does one of the other teams think he is? That, you know, that's going to be the bigger question. Will he get a contract? There's no question he's going to get a contract. Now, is that a 3-year deal, a 4-year deal? Is that a 5-year deal to be a number one goalie? You know, I don't know. I don't know if you know, some other teams see him as a number one. I guess that's, you know, the eyes of the beholder.
Mm-hmm.
But he, you know, there's no question they can't keep him for. He was, I think his cap hit was that's 650.
Yeah, it was low.
Right. 650, 750, yeah. Something.
I think it's 650 or 750. Yeah, one of the two.
Something crazily low like that
for how he played this year and what he meant to the team. Yeah.
So forget that. Now you've got got Jeff Glass, who I think he makes 625. So there's your flip-flop for your cap space, because you got to worry about
that.
Yeah,
get a little bit in there. You're going to have to give Darling a raise anyway. So
you're going to have to give him a raise. So, you know, to be a legitimate backup, the numbers that he put up, you know, maybe would he take a hometown disc at $1.5 million? Yeah, okay, that's still maybe, you know, $750 to $1 million of cap space you ate up that you didn't have in the first place. So he'll be gone.
And as much as he wants to stay in his hometown, he loves the Hawks as much as any player, you know, given his background.
And he really does. You really can tell that, yeah.
Yeah, he's not a young kid. He's not 24. He's what is he, 29, 30? He's older, and he's got to think about himself. This is his one chance maybe to get a bigger contract.
Sure.
He's got to take it.
You got to take the money while you can. I mean, why not?
Well, right.
And the opportunity to be a full-time starter. I mean,
and everybody is, you know, this is a business.
He's 28, by the way.
You know, this is a business. And,
good call.
You got to look after yourselves, and you can take a hometown discount here or there, but you really have to understand that as hockey players, you know, the money that we, you know, make and we bring home are whole two different stories.
Sure.
You know, if you play in Canada, you play in New York, you play in California, if you make $1 million, you come home with 20%. Now, if Chicago, you make $1 million, you come home with 30%. So that's $300,000. If you make $1 million, you come home with $300,000.
There you go.
So You know, for the still, don't get me wrong, it's a lot of money, but average cure for an NHL player is 5 years.
No, but there's like some people assume that, oh, you're set for life because you got one deal, and there's that's not even the case.
You gotta keep going.
It is, it is the farthest thing from you know, sliced bread. You know, I work 9 to 5. You know, I got 2 or 3 different jobs. You know, I've got kids, and you know, I retired. You know, I played 18 years professionally. You know, still, I've still got many years to go. You know, I still got. You know, I got kids to feed, and that money, you know, you get your guys, let's just, you know, Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, when you're making, you're signing $80 million contracts. Yes, are you okay? Those astronomical Jay Cutler deals, absolutely. Yeah. Do they have to worry? But, you know, majority of the athletes, because the average lifespan of an NHL player is 5 years. So you come in the league at 23, 24, you know, you spend your 5 years, you're not even close to 30 yet. And your career's over.
Did the NHL have or the Blackhawks have a good system for educating players on how to save and how to manage their money?
Was no, not at all.
Nothing?
Does any team?
No.
No?
No. We're a piece of meat. So it's,
is that something that they should?
It's yes, no, maybe so. Because go back to, you know, when you were younger and your parents told you, oh, I'll do this, or, you know, I don't like your, you know, don't marry her, I don't like her, or you don't like your girlfriend, or you're not going to listen to them anyways. Yeah. And that, you know, and earlier in the show, I alluded that hindsight is 20/20. Yeah, well, it's for that reason. Are you actually going to listen to him? Because now you're in the NHL. You know, you're expected to you know, keep up this persona. You're supposed to do this, and you're supposed to do that, and you kind of fall into that trap. It's something that's got to happen at a younger age. In junior is where I really think. You know, in junior, when I played junior, I was in the Western Hockey League from ages 16 to 20. You can play. So that's when I really think that's where these classes and these things you should talk about with these, you know, and the same thing in high school. You know, these kids don't know what writing a check is. You know, my kids, here, write a check. What's that? Just give me your credit card. Uh-huh. You know, they don't understand a lot of just the simple basics of life. And then, you know, in hockey players, we get into our routines and, you know, we're getting beaten up and we're traveling. I know in junior, our furthest bus trip was 24 hours on the bus.
Wow. That's a long time to be.
How do you do with yourself?
I mean, maybe that is something that they should install, because I know they've done in the NFL, and I can't remember if they've done it in the NBA now. But
they talk about it, and
I know they have their seminars and stuff. But exactly. Maybe that's something they should place more of an emphasis on.
You know, they've got the NHLPA. Don't get me wrong; they don't have it. You know, it's not like they have nothing. You're high and dry, but there's things out there. I just think that it needs to start at a younger age. You know, for hockey players and like, you know, and my kids too, you know, at a high school level, or so just that basic, you know, money, where it goes, and, you know, just here, run accounts. Here's an account. Here's the bills that you got to pay.
Yeah.
You know, just do it, keep it up for, you know, for a month.
Yeah.
So you visually see that.
Budgeting.
You know, but, you know, and write a check at the end of it, you know, just play, you know, basically it's all, you know, Monopoly money. But I think for everybody, because that's when you really can sink it in at a young age, rather than you're locked up in the emotion of being a pro hockey player.
Right.
You know, I played my first pro game when I was 18 years old.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. So I was
just
like,
a pup then.
Oh, yeah. I just think what I was doing at 18, you know? You know, so you think about that and how time goes, how fast, you know, fast it goes. Now I'm over the hill. My life's almost over. I'm a 40 now.
It's almost over. You're over the hill. But, oh, man, I don't know where I am.
Before we wrap up with a few fan questions here, and we got a ton of them for Brent, but we're just going to kind of narrow it down because we're on a time crunch here. But really quick, to go back to when it's finally over, and this has always kind of fascinated me with athletes, because like you said, the average player, they're only around for 5-6 seasons, and they're not making the Jonathan Toews money.
Yeah.
But emotionally, what is it like that first season when you're officially out? For you, what was that like, that first season, and it's, wow, I'm not going back on the ice, and I know I will never do it again on a professional level. Just emotionally, how hard did that hit you?
Wow, I'm still struggling with it today.
You still get the itch?
You know, no, I'll always have. That's what I did my whole life.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never be able to replace that adrenaline. You know, I'll never be able to slam somebody in the boards. I'll never be able to punch somebody in the face without getting in trouble. and obviously talking about Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau playing injured. You know how badly I miss being hurt and being bruised up and in pain, and you know, I'm in pain for different reasons, but not the pain I want. You'll never replace it. And, it's mentally a grind for me. It's a big challenge for me every single day to get up and go to work and try and figure out, what's that whole new chapter, the next chapter of my life going to be. And every single hockey player goes through it. Even if you have, $60, $70, $80 million, still, when you walk away from that game, money doesn't buy happiness. It buys things.
Yeah.
And this is a game that we absolutely loved and still love, and that it's taken away from us. It's tough. It's a struggle.
Well, not everybody's Chris Chelios either that plays till they're 97. But literally 40, what was he, 47, 48?
No, he's older than that.
He was the older, whatever. Yeah. We'll just say 50. Let's say a guy plays till 50. You still got 30 years left.
I didn't realize he was so close to 50.
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
That you, and yeah.
So. So the only other guy is Jagr that's still going at 47.
Five. No, I'm
at 45.
Well, yeah. No, actually, a press release just came out that he is officially from a different planet. So he is not. He's not a human.
He's a genetic
planet
freak.
Krypton.
And the other guy, I call him on the show, this genetic freak is Duncan Keith. So there's only a few. And Chris Chelios is a genetic freak also.
Yeah, I saw him on the street not that long ago, actually on Rush Street. And shocker. And he does. He looks like he could still lace him up now.
I used to, when I was playing in LA, I used to work out at 5:30 in the morning with Jeremy Roenick, Chris Chelios. There's a bunch of hockey guys at Gold's Gym in Venice. That's it. Wow. Absolutely.
Wow.
And
just throwing around those iron pancakes, a bunch of animals.
He would crush us. He would lap us. This is Chris Chelios showing up there in his Jeep and, destroying us in the weight room.
Wow.
And, I wasn't been in the league. There was, it was all hockey guys, in the morning at that point in time, and he would destroy us. And, one day Jeremy Roenick tried to keep up to him, and JR just about puked and couldn't catch him.
See, my experiences at the gym are a lot different than your experience. This guy's a Jeremy Roenick.
I'm usually asking where water is.
Yeah. And I'm asking, can you really please wipe that sweat off? Because that's disgusting.
I spend most of the time stretching, then I kind of just go home.
Few of the interesting ones that we really wanted to point out here from the fans, and you can still submit questions, and we're going to be doing some stuff from the convention and some other things. So
might
we're not going away.
Might do a draft show even.
We might even do a draft show.
We haven't talked about it, but maybe we'll do it.
And it's gonna be here before you know it in town. So be free to, feel free to keep sending in questions. Facebook.com/BlackhawksCrazy. Also at Brent_Sopel, at Scott King Media, at
JC Green X.
At JC Green X. JC Green X. You are a great follow, and I told you that last time you were on. Got a lot of good thoughts on not just sports. You're all over the board. I like it.
You're a very wise man.
You are a very wise man.
Learned.
And I am at Jacobson Radio. So the one that I liked the best was, Mr. Brent Sopel knows a few things about commitment to defense. Would you answer the call, I should say, with Kitchen out? So essentially, the big picture, would you want to get into coaching ever? Whether not even the Blackhawks, so it's, the Edmonton Oilers call or the San Jose Sharks, would you pick up and move and chase an opportunity like that? What about even in the AHL?
Well, 100, if the Blackhawks called, I'd be jumping and diving at that phone. Would I love to? Yeah, absolutely. I have, my own hockey schools and do a lot of one-on-one, just for defensemen. So would I love to? 100%. And the fact that I could do it at home would be, hands down, there's no question.
Yeah, here.
I've had some opportunities in some different places, and I haven't jumped at them because – I've been gone my whole life, through my whole kids' lives, I've been gone. So, I got, 13 and 15 year old daughters at home. That's it. So everybody else is out of the house and, on college. So it's a different world. So I kind of wanted to stick around a little while and be with them and kind of see what goes on a daily basis. Cause as hockey players, you play their whole lives. All they know is me gone traveling in the practice at the gym playing games. So, but the Hawks, there's no question, between, Blackhawks or, even Rockford, I would do it. I really enjoy, obviously I love the game of hockey, but I enjoy teaching the game. And, when I'm on, like this or TV or whatever, I always think that I'm trying to teach whoever's listening to this show or watching me about what I see and how I see the game, so I can, hopefully broaden their horizon. And if I could watch younger guys, or it is a Blackhawks, these guys, developed as Stanley Cup winners, it's, as a guy that's been there and done that, that's a dream come true.
What is the most important thing that the NHL player, the Hawks, want out of the coaching staff? you know, whoever replaces Kitchen. What do they want out of those guys?
Well, you know, it's you got to first figure out what you're going to implement, what kind of system, you know, is that, and then you've got to develop. Even though you got Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook and Yarmolson are veterans, they can still get better. There's nobody in any league of any substance, of Michael Jordan to, you know, Magic Johnson to Gretzky to Mary Lou, they still can improve. So it's, you know, it's watching video and working with them, trying to improve them. You can improve somebody 5%. Obviously, you know, if you talk about the whole team, the Chicago Blackhawks team in the regular season improving 5%, and they already had 50 wins, where did that take them? You know, 55, 60 wins. So, you know, they want to help develop. Then you got younger guys in there, you know, develop them into being pros, because it's a long season. It's a grind. It's 82 games. It's being their sounding board when they're upset coming back, and they can come and scream at you, and you kind of have scream matches. But then you can, you know, you can soften the blow, and the coach has got certain things going on. So, you know, assistant coach has got a lot of different roles that he's got to play. He's got to play with the coach in one ear, and he's got the players on the other. So he's got to definitely play both sides and be nice across the board.
All right, we got about a minute left here. So that last question from was at Late in the Goldie, which is an awesome Twitter handle, by the way. And at Cliff Douche, it looks like douche.
You want to
like,
say douche.
You want to say douche, but yeah. We'll say douche, whatever it is. And I know this is a hard question to answer in a minute or less, but are the Hawks becoming too predictable in terms of their scheming and their style, that style of cue? Do you think people are starting to adapt to it? Well, and this is to everybody, not just...
Brittany, what do you think? Brittany's been waiting patiently. She helped us early in the show. This is, what do you think?
Well, like I said last time, I think the Hawks' offense is really predictable. Like, Panarin's in that one spot all the time. Every time Panarin had the puck, there was someone in the shooting lane, someone in the passing lane between him and Kane, and then someone between him and the blue line. So, yeah, it's a little predictable. They need to change some things up. And defense, too. Like I said, we're kind of stay-at-home defensemen also. And playing against Nashville, who had a four-man attack the entire time. And not only a four-man attack, a four-man playoff attack, which is the first time we saw P.K. Subban in the playoffs, which kind of ran a train.
Yeah, and they were tricky. Kane and Hossa talked a lot about their D. They would sit back and do that trap that I was talking about. And then also, their transition was so fast, they smack you right in the mouth. So, yeah, I mean, you're kind of talking about the players are predictable, and maybe the system on offense and defense for the Hawks is predictable now, too, and that's why you're seeing coaching changes, and we're about to see some player changes.
Former professional hockey player, your thoughts?
I forgot Brian Sopel had a career.
nicely disagree. Alexander Ovechkin, how many goals has he scored? Where has he scored them? You know, so it's
you find it when something works, you find a way to make it work.
You make it work, and a lot of the Nashville series, you got to give them a lot of credit. You know, they going into the series, you know, going into the season, I said that they had one of the deepest defense core out there, and the crazy thing is, PK Subban did absolutely nothing in the series. You know, now...
Yeah, it wasn't that noticeable, was it?
He didn't do a thing. He was good defensively. Offensively, he wasn't really jumping into play. Roman Josi was up there. Ryan Allison were their two big horses. So now if you get PK Subban going in this next round, Ekblom, you get these guys going, they're very, very dangerous. So I think you got to give them a lot on that credit. Chicago Blackhawks in the offensive zone are skilled enough, smart enough to create time and space the way they need to, as long as they've... moving their feet, and as long as they're working. You know, if you don't work and you don't move your feet, you're never going to create that time and space, and that's where you talk about the passing lane was taken away or that shooting lane away, because if you're stagnant, it's so easy to kill.
All right, around the room really quick, Stanley Cup predictions, and who is going to actually take home the cup? I'm going to start with Jimmy Greenfield.
I'm going to go Caps over Preds.
Caps over Preds. Brittany?
My bracket has been turned upside down. So
join the club.
You and everybody else.
Good Lord. I have the Penguins.
My goalie pool,
going,
I don't even
so
want to.
Oh, I think the Pens are going to take it, maybe.
The Pens?
I think
Are they beating the Preds? Who do you have them beating?
I had them losing to the Hawks, so I have to rethink some
things. That's how I feel.
Who do you got, Brett?
Yeah, you know, it's I've been trying to figure this out. This year has been, you know, a completely disaster when it comes to bracket and trying to figure out these teams. Pittsburgh Penguins got some injuries in the back end. Can they keep up? Can they repeat, be the first team ever do it in the salary cap era? I don't think so. I just think it's way too hard. on their body.
It's such a long road, isn't it?
It's such a grind to go back to back the way it is to your body. You just like Murray's hurt. You know, can these guys do it? I just don't think so. I do think they get past the Washington Capitals. I think it comes out of the West this year because the East is, you know, going to beat each other up. It's going to be speed, and I think Nashville does it.
Wow.
I agree with Jimmy. I think Caps over Preds. I think Preds look like they're going to get there. I think that trap and that transition I talked about, and their first line's awesome. Victor Arvidsson, Ryan Johansson was able to shut down Taves in that first line. At center, I think that they're a great team, but I think the Capitals are really probably the most dominant team still in. They got some trouble with the Maple Leafs, but
in
that's
past
a great
years
series.
They would have lost that series, but yeah. Getting past that one, they're going to feel like, you know, the headache's gone. Now they're feeling better.
I agree.
I like the Predators too. I mean, they're so hot right now, and coming into the way that they played against the Blackhawks, and that's the team that I've seen the most. Just to be selfishly and honestly, because I get up so damn early, so I do watch. I've watched every single game of the Blackhawks series, and they just look.
They remind me a lot of Pittsburgh last year.
Yeah, they do. They really do. That's exactly what I was going to say. Actually, just a hot team right now, and I think they take it over the Caps. I think the Caps get there, and we'll see what happens. But it's going to be a tough watch for Blackhawks fans as they get through a couple more months here of hockey. But if you're a hockey fan,
it'd be a lot worse if it's the Blues who come out.
I didn't think they were going to get past the first round.
That would not be a
weird
good thing.
Things are happening. You never know.
I think those Blues would get smoked by the Caps, though. Absolutely. Yeah. Smoked.
Think so?
Yeah.
Well, we'll all see how it plays out. And thanks to everybody for coming in today for the final recap.
We had everybody who helped us out this year. Guests on our show, Brittany, everyone. So it was great to have everybody
Brett
here.
Brett coming in a couple of times, which was great. Jimmy's coming in a couple of times. So, Brittany as well. So we thank
awesome
everybody.
To have
thanks
everyone.
To
thank
everybody on our Facebook page, which is up to like almost 25,000 likes, right? Something like that.
We're getting there. I wanted to be there for the playoffs. The playoffs are non-existent in Chicago right now. So but maybe by the time the convention rolls
around. We're definitely going to be doing something with the convention. Brent will definitely be a part of that. And then we're definitely going to probably try to get something in for the draft, too. So
at least we'll do a show here or something. Yeah.
We're going to do something.
We'll be around, guys.
We'll be around. So facebook.com/BlackhawksCrazy. You'll be still writing on Chelsea Blogger, which is at WGNRadio.com. Brett Sobel will still be on the beat and several other shows and participating in the Steve Cochran show.
And Brent and I are starting a dog walking business in the suburbs, too, if you guys, anybody needs help.
Well, maybe you can get Soupy to help out in the offseason here.
He's got some pets, right?
He's got a little bit of time. He's going to hit the golf course a lot, though. I do know Soup loves to play some golf. So. But thanks to everybody again for listening. This is the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast, closing out the 2016-2017 season. Enjoy the rest of playoff hockey. Not the Blackhawks, but it should be fun anyway. We'll talk to you soon.